Hello and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast, the weekly podcast series brought to you by FT Advisor. Each week we pick a topic to discuss and this week we'll be talking about networks. Last month, Tenet announced it will close its network with its appointed representatives moving to the Open Work Partnership as part of an exclusive agreement with the company. The agreement will provide Tenet's firms and advisors with the choice of retaining their independent status through Open Work's IFA business two-plan wealth management or becoming part of the restricted Open Work proposition. This is one of the more recent pieces of news, but in July, the Financial Conduct Authority's annual report and accounts for 2022 to 2023 revealed that there has been a 19% drop in the number of appointed representative firms in almost 3 years. The FCA said intervention from the regulator has seen the number of ARs decline in recent years. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about where we are with networks and where we are heading. I'm Sonia Arch, Deputy News Editor at FT Advisor, and joining me today is Emma Napier, Consulting Director at NextWealth, and Rachel Finessi, Company Director at Aspire Executive Search. Welcome both, and thank you for joining. So to begin with, looking at networks and all the recent news, some have argued it is now the death of them. What are your thoughts on the state of them right now? Can we expect more or are we sort of approaching the end? So perhaps you want to take that first, Emma?
Sure. I think we've been along a road for you know, some time where networks are concerned. But I just think, and this isn't the podcast to talk about the market and where we're heading and what advisors are doing. We are talking about networks, but I do think there is a consequence of the mergers and acquisitions and how advisors are generally feeling about regulation. And it just feels to me that it is a time of considerable change generally, but actually in respect of advisors themselves, it's a, you know, now's the time to make a change. And so I think that the industry generally is having an impact on networks. And the other thing, and I'm sure we can debate it, is I just think it's really hard to monitor if you are a network and you are the controlling network that's making all the rules and monitoring those advisors. That's really hard to do when there's so much change as well. I don't know what you think, Rachel.
Yeah, I really feel for the owners of network run business, of the networks. We work with them really closely with, and they're all approaching it in really different ways. But if you look at the data on it, the principal run AR firms, they're the ones where there's, what I think the stats, 50% to 400% more complaints against those firms. So we all know that the changes need to happen. But when you're, say, if you look at a network that's maybe got 20 ARs within it, it's really difficult for those owners to actually manage it because they don't have the capital behind them, which is why we're seeing a lot of the consolidations, and that will continue. There's a huge shift in the network space that does need to happen, but it's how that pans out. You know, I wonder if we're going to have more of a kind of split market where we've got networks that are sort of operating a restricted model. So your likes of, you know, Aviva have bought Succession, and we've got M&G with Sandringham, and that growing to be kind of like the old direct sales model almost, because they're offering a restricted model. And then the ones that can actually truly offer truly fully independent, it's more and more difficult for them to succeed in that. So yeah,
There's different academies that have sprung up as well, haven't they? You mentioned M&G there. I was thinking about them, and, you know, SJP and people like that have always had an advisor academy.
Yeah.
But with the movement of advisors that are being swallowed up by the larger firms in terms of the consolidation that is going on at the moment, I just think that those large firms are also equipping themselves to be able to attract new talent or manage existing talent through their own network. Do I call it a network or is it just a national firm?
Yeah.
And that's the difference. And I don't know where networks stop and national firms take over these days, because I think they're doing the same thing, really. Yeah.
There's a lot of like blurred lines between it now, isn't it? Because of all the consolidation going on in the industry, it's sort of like, is it a network anymore or is it kind of you're just big a part of a big company now? So it's quite an interesting one.
Well, the regulator wants less firms to manage, don't they?
Yeah.
So it's the logic's there as to why all of it's happening, but it's a very changeable market that we're in with it all. And I mean, some of the owner-managed firms that we worked with have sort of looked at how they've implemented like the management of it. So you take the likes of Vision, who are Rathbones owned. Mm. They have a management structure across the business so that all of their advisors have actually got a manager to sign off their cases, and that helps them work with the changing expectations. But smaller businesses who haven't got that backing, they can't facilitate that with their structure.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, what would you say, I guess, is going to be the impact of that? I mean, the fact that the FCA kind of essentially wants less firms to manage, but overall, what's the impact of that on competition and just kind of allowing it to firms to kind of have some level of independence without being part of a restricted model? Because that seems to be something fading away almost. So, you know, what do you think about that?
I think it's more difficult. And the question is how that impacts the client, because is the client truly getting the best advice there's two ways to look at it, aren't there? That you're getting more supported, more compliant advice through a heavily managed network / national proposition. But are they truly getting independent advice? Because it's more difficult for people, advisor firms, to sustain that offering.
Yeah, I think the same. I think that restricted firms are the easier option for you know, firms as they consolidate, as they grow, as they scale. It's a lot easier to control the oversight of the firms sitting underneath or the individuals if you've got a restricted nature. With the IFA nationals or networks or whatever we're calling them, it is difficult. But actually, if we're talking about networks, is it the IFA national firms that become the new networks? Because actually you've got some independent advisors sitting within a structure that's a larger firm, but those independent advisors won't all be recommending the same products and they'll have different views and their clients will be the same. So there might be more work to do underneath in terms of the regulation and how you monitor it and all of that kind of stuff. But actually, if you're a good national firm and you put the education in and you help your advisors and you understand the advisors that sit within it who are independent and doing something different, then I think there's a market waiting to happen as well. We at Next Wealth are just about to launch our financial advisors business benchmark report, which is a free of charge annual report. And it just looks across the market at the different advisor firms, whether they're restricted, how many people in them, what it costs them, what they're spending on tech, all of that kind of stuff. And we do that every year. So it'll be interesting to see what the shape looks like this year versus last year, how many are taking that independent stance, how many are looking at vulnerable clients, how many are, you know, doing things slightly different in terms of consumer duty. And then I think when it settles back down, we end up with this new environment that is less about the old, you know, you sit within a network structure and you do what the network says and the network monitors you. Yeah. Or is there this new sort of way of existence that you just exist under a different owner? And you choose your path almost. So that will be interesting.
That will be interesting. And I guess it's kind of timely in the sense that, you know, when RDR came about, it sort of kind of changed the whole industry as people knew it at the time. And now we've got Consumer Duty aligning with potentially just as much of a drastic change to see in the industry how things kind of move forward. So I think it'll be one to watch for sure. But I guess kind of just touching on sort of some of the things we've already been talking about. But why I guess are some networks struggling and others are not? You know, what are the ones that are sort of not struggling as much? What are they doing right, and what are others doing wrong? And where, for those that want to succeed, I guess what do they need to be doing? Do you want to take that one first?
So for me, I think it's with any business, whether you're a network, a national, a small business, or any business, you have to evolve. So you have to continue to think about the market you operate in. But having said that, it's really hard to make money in an advice firm. Mm-hmm. It's really hard, and especially as the regulation gets greater and greater. And I've spoken to so many advisors that have just had enough of taking the onus on themselves. Mm-hmm. So again, I think there is this market for the network model, but just under a different structure. But going back to your question, Sonia, I think it's really hard to monitor as the principal firm the network members underneath, that because everybody's different, they've all got their own identities, they're all doing something different, they're all individual businesses themselves, but they've been through a massive regulatory change as well. So not only is it hard to make money as an advice business anyway, especially if you're not restricted and you can make money in other areas, but it's really hard to keep that oversight of those firms and keep it up to date whilst you're also evolving. Mm-hmm. So where's the technology fit in? Where can, you know, as a network, what can you do with your member firms to really boost the technology that the firms adopt without sticking another few zeros on the annual cost?
Yeah.
And what is the impact of that? So I think there's a market for it. I just think that the old model hasn't got there yet. So that the newer network models will hopefully adopt technology, will hopefully exist in a different environment,
yeah,
and will hopefully set the precedent for the future.
Sure. And did you have anything to add to that, Rach?
I think it's agree with everything you've said there, Emma. And it's really for networks to implement spans of control is a way that they can facilitate it, but that comes at a cost, like you rightly pointed out. So for networks who want to stay successful and profitable, they've got to grow, they've got to scale, because with the scaling, then that gives them the margins to then implement the infrastructure to support actually meeting the guidance that the FCA need them to be meeting. And that's a bit of chicken and egg, because until they've grown and got the profit margins coming through, then but they need to put that infrastructure there to succeed in the future environment. So I think that, or getting financial backing, which is obviously where the consolidation side of thing comes in, that mm-hmm. that's why we're seeing a lot of it, that smaller businesses are jumping into bigger businesses, so they've got that backing to be able to create the infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I guess it will make sense as to why it's happening, but what kind of will be the impact on the culture overall, and especially with the kind of AR firms that also will kind of operate in a slightly different way, and then suddenly there's all this consolidation. Mm. Moving forward, I guess, what do you think will be the impact on the culture of sort of the network, or the bigger network / national at the time?
Well, it's interesting because when you've got the AR, so people who go into the advice industry tend to be quite entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. and the smaller ARs, they manage their clients through their entire career. And so for the clients, they've got this dedicated advisor who looks after them, and that will change because if it's more restricted and it's going into more heavily managed networks / nationals and however that looks, that's kind of taking a little bit of that away, which will change the culture of the advice side of things. Mm-hmm. I think technology will be implemented more and more. There was an article came out this morning about should AI be regulated, because I think 50% of power planners have voted that it should be. But that's going to, I believe, massively help the industry.
Yeah.
But we've got to go through that journey, haven't we, where that's actually a benefit. And we're only on the cusp of how that will help businesses and smaller businesses sustain what they need to. And that's going to impact the culture, isn't it? Back to the original question of cultures. It's any change will impact a culture, but the
I think also there are, you know, some of these, I don't want to make this about consolidation, but it has, it's got a place
here.
Yeah,
it's the elephant in the room.
It really is. But there is an awful lot of commerciality that's sitting around this market as well. So if you are, an AR and you've been ticking along nicely under your network and not really bothering anyone, and you're kind of clients are happy with what you do, and then all of a sudden somebody comes along with a big fat check and waves it in front of you, it might be at a time where regulation's, you know, just a bit annoying, and maybe you've done a few pension transfer cases that, you know, a bit dicey, or there's been a few complaints or whatever it is. It just might be the right time for those AR firms to just say, I'm going to take the check. I'm going to transition over a couple of years, and I'm gone and I'm done.
Yeah.
And as long as my clients are happy in that new environment, then I've done what I've done. And I do think that that is having an impact. But what we haven't spoken about is the sort of mortgage side of the world and the protection side of the world, because I think there's a massive place for networks in that world. So I kind of live and breathe in the sort of investment world and the platform world and the wealth side. But actually, I've been talking to a few advisors recently who, you know, they're doing really, really well with mortgages. And, you know, the environment that they live in actually sits really well under a network because the structure's there.
Yeah.
So going back to your question, Sonia, I think that culture plays a massive part in the success of the right business, but also if you're a network, then the culture in that business, but also not dismissing the fact that you can't stay like that forever and mm-hmm. things change and you need to be able to accommodate and grow. And it might be that some of those AR firms have always had an intention to become directly authorised at some point in the future, but why not be a really good halfway house for those advisors that want that sort of environment to be able to transition, but support them along the way. And there's a commercial model that sits behind all of that. So
we still speak to a lot of advisors who have built up their own businesses, and they, you know, they really want to go DA, but it's so difficult for, they have to manage so much and the costs that come with it. And you know, if they want to grow their businesses, we've got around the corner the DB storm, the PI storm that's coming, and businesses need to be able to weather what's coming with that. And that's where having the support of something bigger behind you really, really does help.
Yeah, I mean, and that actually kind of transitions quite nicely into one of my questions, which is kind of, you know, whether the industry is sort of heading towards a more directly authorised focused industry, or will it sort of remain as it is? And it's kind of, I guess, a good question to conclude on, to round up kind of all the conversations we've been having. But what do you think is kind of going to be, I guess, a 3-year, 5-year outlook almost as to what this will look like? So Rachel, do you want to take that one first?
I think we'll almost have a split market that will feel like it's reverted back to kind of where we were, where we had like the bank assurance side of things, and that will be more the consolidated big national firms with a restricted offering. And then the other side of the market will be the DA firms who are offering truly independent advice, and maybe a couple of networks who've managed to sustain that because they've grown enough to be able to facilitate that happening. So there'll be a bit of a split market. And I think that's where we're going to end up over the next probably 2-3 years with what we're seeing at the moment.
Sure. Well, and
I agree. I would be looking for some innovation around networks. So I'd be looking to the networks as they are right now to be looking 2 years or 18 months ahead. What do they want to be? What facilities can they provide their members, not just their members now, but members of the future? And those members might be members that have taken a different direction. Maybe they have joined a larger firm. You know, maybe they're not comfortable there. Maybe their clients aren't that happy. Mm. And maybe they're looking for a home within a network. But I would like to see some innovation. I think that we should have moved on from the networks existing how they've always existed. And I wonder if that has played a massive part in the demise of some of the names you mentioned right at the start. So
I think we're sort of lacking as an industry that support, though, for those firms to get that infrastructure, whether it's kind of like training, mentoring and helping them, or having academies that they can tap into without having to go to join one of the bigger boys, so that they've got access to that kind of support to enable them to give a better service to their advisors, which then gives a better service to clients. And that's how we can go through that evolution that you're talking about. By, I think it's lacking in our industry, that access point for advisor firms to have that, to help their growth.
Yeah. I think evolution is probably the right term to use there, because it is sort of kind of almost a rebirth of what the industry is going to look like as and how it's going to change from what we know it as it is now. So,
which is good. It's a really positive thing, but it's sticky at the moment. And I do feel for the owners who are going through the process and through the journey, but if they can see the potential that it can give them and their businesses and the industry, we are going to evolve. It's happening.
Mm. It's just that nobody likes change, do they?
Yeah. So the only constant
they don't, but like it or not, change is happening.
Yeah.
And whatever way or whatever box you sit in, change is happening. But we must continue to make financial services a really cool place to be for the advisors of the future, whichever label they want to stick on themselves, whether they're an AR or a DA or however they are, because it's got to, it's a great place to be and there's lots of opportunity. And, you know, we're not even going to go down the advice gap route. But,
you know,
there's a whole, oh my God, how long we've got? But yeah, so I think, you know, for me, it's innovation, it's technology, it's looking for the future. And like it or not, we're going through change anyway. Mm. So we've got to create a nice space for the next evolution of networks.
And to bring in the young, fresh minds to help take that evolution forward, who will embrace technology because they've grown up with it more. And if we're, again, another subject, but really accessing those school leavers and all of that side of things who can help take this forward with the technology that we've got access to, it's going to really ramp things up in the industry.
Yeah,
definitely. So, I mean, unfortunately, that's all we've kind of got time for today.
Sorry, did we go on, are we?
But it was really nice to have you both on here. So thank you for kind of joining. I'm sure that will not be the last we hear of this topic. So we'll be rediscussing it at some point, I'm sure. And of course, thank you to those who are listening. Just join us next week as we discuss another hot topic in the financial services industry.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.